Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, the virtual currency known as Bitcoin has been in the news lately because you can now use it at some mom-and-pop stores in New York City. There's a wine shop on Staten Island and a bar on the Lower East Side that accept it, and the online retailer Overstock.com now accepts Bitcoin as payment. So is the almighty dollar being challenged by the almighty Bitcoin? Our next guest is here to talk about the rush to mine Bitcoins. Ashley Vance is a technology writer for Bloomberg Businessweek and has the cover story on it this week. Ashley, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
You have to mine Bitcoins to earn them, but for people who don't know, instead of digging in the earth, a computer uses a complex calculation to mine and create Bitcoins. Can you explain more to the uninitiated about how that works?
Yeah, you bet. As with everything Bitcoin, there's layers of complexity to this, but the basics are, you know, in Bitcoin, there's this ledger that's public. Anybody can see it if you download some software, and it's this record of all the transactions. If somebody buys something or sells something, this is public for anyone to see, and the Bitcoin miners, they serve two functions. One is every about 10 minutes, they get all those transactions and add them up, and they try to verify them, make sure that the credits and debits match up. And then they have to solve this puzzle, and it's just this very hard mathematical puzzle that was programmed into this software, and whoever solves that puzzle first and verifies the transactions, they get 25 bitcoins for their work.
And a person in your article who mines bitcoins told you, quote, "It takes up a lot of time, but I have no kids, I have no life, I have a cat." Is that was a quote. Is that what it takes to get into this game successfully?
Yeah, well, there's all different layers depending on how serious of a Bitcoin miner you want to be. When I was doing the story, you know, I found these kind of enthusiasts that you can buy like a USB stick that you plug in your PC for about $250, and it can get you into Bitcoin mining. But your odds of solving that puzzle are really low, so it's sort of a waste of money. If you spend about $12,000, you have a decent chance of solving that puzzle before anybody else. And then there's groups that are building what are called Bitcoin mines, and it's essentially, you could think of it as like a data center, like a company might have full of computer servers, except in this case, it's full of computers that are mining Bitcoin, and you could spend millions of dollars on that.
You mean just to get into the game and successfully get your 25 Bitcoins?
Exactly. So the calculation, that puzzle that gets solved, it helps to have a fast computer. That gives you a better chance of solving it, but it's a little bit random. So as long as you have a computer that's fast enough to put you in the game, you might, as an individual, be able to solve it before the guy with the supercomputer of all the Bitcoin machines. But the big guy is more likely to get it. So sort of the more you spend, the better chance you have of doing.
Listeners, any Bitcoin calls this morning? Have you mined Bitcoins? Are you buying and selling Bitcoins? Are you the proprietor of a store that now accepts Bitcoins as payment? Are you one of those people predicting a Bitcoin bubble turning into a Bitcoin crash? 212-433-WNYC on all things Bitcoin, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. No mining necessary to get there. My guest, Ashley Vance, technology writer for Bloomberg Businessweek. We should say that they're pretty valuable right now, about $1,000 a piece. And if a single Bitcoin is worth about $1,000, if someone can figure out a way to get in on the craze, then they could potentially make quite a bit of money. What did they start out at? It was a lot less than that, right?
Yeah, well, you know, for a while before it seemed to really have hit the mainstream about a year ago, Bitcoin would be it was trading like basically $60 to $200, somewhere in that range. It was really volatile. And then it's really sort of the last 6 months, 8 months, where it kicked up over 500, then 750, and then 1,000. And last I checked this morning, I think it was just under $1,000 per Bitcoin.
So a lot of Silicon Valley startups are popping up, I see from your piece, to service the Bitcoin rush, like Coinbase, which makes software that allows people to store their virtual Bitcoin securely, or companies that manufacture those high-powered computers you were describing needed to mine bitcoins. Are any of these companies making money yet, or is this all still speculative?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to answer really clean cut. The hardware makers, it's pretty interesting. So they sell these Bitcoin mining computers. They sort of pre-sell them because they're all in this race to make these machines as quick as they can. And you know, the ones I interviewed in the story, all of them pretty much sold about $20 to $25 million worth of these systems so far, and I think they are probably making a profit on each machine. And then some of the startups you're talking about, I mean, that's kind of what the Bitcoin market has been hungering for, is that it's a very complex technology, and I think, you know, for the average person to sort of figure out how you get a Bitcoin was really difficult for a long time. And so some of the startups like Coinbase and Mt. Gox that you mentioned, they are kind of exchanges that help people. You can even, you know, make a transfer just from your bank and turn that into Bitcoin now. And that, it's only recently this is all becoming much easier to do.
212-433-WNYC. Jerry in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm a journalist and have been for many years a journalist, and B, I love your radio station. I think you have a terrific show.
Thank you.
My question is real simple. Why is the station and why is Bloomberg spending any time on this absolutely inane, silly story? At first, when I heard the headline of you saying, oh, we're going to talk about this Bitcoin and Overstock accepts it, et cetera, I said to myself, oh, let me find out what this trend is. And then I listened to the details from the reporter. I said, it's insane. It's silly. It's meaningless. I'd love to know from the reporter, why are you making a big deal of this?
Well, it's a total...
On guard.
It's a fair question. I mean, there are people that see this as just, the latest craze. There's a guy in my story who says, you know, he sort of compares Bitcoin to Miley Cyrus. But this is, it's something that started out. We thought the U.S. government would shut down Bitcoin, and they've gone the other way. There's senators that are behind it. The government has said, you know, we think this is probably a viable thing. Certainly, it's interesting from a business standpoint in that there's real money being invested in this from investors with very deep pockets. We do see Overstock that first day when they started taking Bitcoin. They sold hundreds of thousands of dollars of things in Bitcoin. And, I'm certainly not out there saying I think this is the next revolution. The pro case about Bitcoin is this idea that it's a currency for the digital age. This is a currency that makes sense in the era of the internet. And so there's people that think there was an argument just this week that $1,000, they think, you know, it's going to go up to $100,000 per Bitcoin. And people say they compare it to 1995 with the internet, that we're just at the start of this.
And I would say, Jerry, that why we're spending a few minutes on it near the end of the show, it's worth a few minutes near the end of the show. There's enough going on. That's after we talked at length about Robert Gates' memoir and the national security of the United States, at length about traffic fatalities in New York City and about Obamacare. But as I said at the beginning of the segment, there are developments. A wine shop on Staten Island now takes Bitcoin. A bar on the Lower East Side accepts Bitcoins, and Overstock.com, as you said, now accepts Bitcoin as payment. So there is this sort of creeping legitimacy to it that makes you wonder what it's going to become. There are, and Jerry, thank you for your call. Now, Ashley, Jerry is certainly not the only person to belittle the Bitcoin phenomenon as something worthy of more disdain than serious conversation. You know about the, I don't even know how to say the word, Doge coins?
There's an explosion of virtual currencies. Now, I mean, one other point that I was going to make is that, yeah, this, you know, whether it's Bitcoin, and then it seems to start getting a little bit silly because there's 40 or 50 digital coins. Kanye, there's a coin named after Kanye West. It's
really?
Kanye West now. So all of that seems silly. But then on the other hand, there seems to be something going on here, which is that this idea of a virtual currency where you don't have to go through a clearinghouse, where you don't have to pay transaction fees to a bank or a credit card processing company if you're just trying to pay another individual for something, you know, why there seems to be a hunger for some sort of digital currency. I think, you know, we're definitely seeing this idea take hold, whether it's Bitcoin that ends up winning or not.
Right.
That's not clear.
And it's not clear to me whether these Doge coins or Doge coins. It's D-O-G-E coins. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. It's meant to be satirical or real, created by a fan of the Doge or Doge internet meme, which features pictures of a cute Shiba Inu with his supposed interior monologue photoshopped over the pictures. Some people know that meme. So these Doge coins or whatever were supposed to be a satire of Bitcoins, and yet they've kind of taken off. And the other day it was announced that more Doge coins were traded than Bitcoins. I guess that means on a particular day. So who knows?
You know, I'd also had the if you take the Bitcoin price and the amount that people have paid in real money for these, you know, it's in the trillions of dollars,
wow.
I believe, or at least hundreds of billions. So the it's real on some level.
Bill in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. You're on WNYC. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Basic question is, I don't understand. If we're talking about trillions of dollars, why wouldn't the government be interested in it? I mean, the biggest problem we have in this country today is that we have finances that the government doesn't get, even though they're entitled to them. How are they taxed? How are they controlled? They don't have serial numbers. I mean, are there reporting rules?
Well, yeah, and in fact, the you know, when Bitcoin first hit the scene, there was this website called the Silk Road, and it was it's a place where people would buy drugs and all sorts of nefarious things. And Bitcoin, because it's anonymous, you could do this anonymously. And the FBI recently shut it down. But everyone thought it was the government, especially in the U.S., would latch onto that and have this negative reaction to Bitcoin. But it's been the opposite. In fact, you know, after the Silk Road was shut down, there's been hearings about Bitcoin, and there's senators who are sending, their press people are sending me emails every day saying they're 100% behind this currency as something we should look at. And the ledger of transactions of Bitcoin, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's public. And so the counterfeiting and things like that, I mean, everything that's done with Bitcoin is out in the open for anyone to see.
But what backs Bitcoins? Anything? I mean, for that matter, we could ask, what backs the U.S. dollar at this point? Nothing. They
yeah.
can print as much as they want. It's not been pegged to the gold standard in 40 or 50 years. So does it matter if anything backs Bitcoins?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. Like, if you talk to the pro-Bitcoin people, they're like, I know this sounds ridiculous, this money, but if I had to explain to you how the dollar actually works today, it would be no less ridiculous.
Right.
And the way Bitcoin is sort of maintained, I mean, there's that public ledger that I talked about, but there is no central body behind Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you have people who have downloaded this software that maintain the ledger. And so at this point, you have tens of thousands of people that have downloaded that ledger. And so the odds of it, you know, being like wiped off the face of the earth is very low.
And like I said at the beginning, when you use Bitcoin to buy something, the retailer, such as Overstock, is converting it to dollars. So it's not really a currency so much as a mode of exchanging monetary value. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean,
well, maybe there's nothing more to a currency than a mode of exchanging monetary value.
Well, because, you know, you can feasibly sort of just be in the Bitcoin world buying things now without ever going through another currency. So
China is concerned enough that it has banned Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the interesting thing, is that China is the largest market for Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. It was, and you know, it looks like the government there, they did ban it, and that sent, the day they did that, it sent the price down from about $1,000 to, I think it was around $650 or $700. It was about a 30% drop, and this anonymous part of Bitcoin, I think, is what China's not a big fan of. But the price has since come back.
Let's get one more call in. Matthew in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had looked into these machines that mine Bitcoin, and from what I was reading about it, it seemed that the profits from mining Bitcoins was put against the cost of electricity, and the cost of electricity for these machines was very high. And what I was reading seemed to say that your actual profit margin is very small, because you have to pay so much to mm-hmm. actually power the machines.
And we have about 20 seconds left, so Ashley Vance
yep.
from Bloomberg Business Week, quick response to Matthew.
Yeah, you bet. There's online calculators where you can put in your price of power, the speed of the machine that you have, and the price of Bitcoin, and you sort of have to make that calculation every day. It depends on the price of Bitcoin at that time, if it's worth it to you, and how much you pay for power. And the guy with the huge Bitcoin mine I talked to, he's in Seattle, so he doesn't have to pay much for power.
And we have to leave it for today right there with Ashley Vance. The article he wrote with Brad Stone is "The Bitcoin Mining Arms Race Heats Up," and it's in this week's Bloomberg Business Week on that virtual currency. Ashley, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.